Welcome to Growing Up in America with on KPFT Houston Pacifica Radio with our host from Children at Risk, noted child activist Dr. Bob Sanborn and policy expert Mandy Kimball. What do we have on tap today, Bob and Mandy?
Hey!
Hello, hello! Happy Monday!
Happy Monday to you, Mandy. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic.
So you just got back from some wild vacation, right?
Oh man, it was so much fun.
Well, it was
Colorado,
four kids.
Skiing.
It was four kids. And how did that go with all the kids?
You know what? Kids pick it up very quickly.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Adults,
last day,
not so much. But you're a skier. I mean, you're 12. Pretty comfortable with the snow yourself, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, yeah.
It was great family time.
Now, you are generally a snowboarder.
Mm-hmm.
And you switched to skis this time?
I did. It's my second time to go skiing.
And it was fine?
It was good. Yeah. Skiing is the way to go. It's much easier on your body.
Than snowboarding?
I think so. Absolutely.
No, I'm a big snowboarder. I could just never imagine skiing.
Mm-hmm. No. The transition is very easy.
Yeah. Wow. Wow, very good.
Really? I didn't know you were such a snowboarder.
Yeah, I really am not a big winter sports guy. So, to tell you the truth. But you know
what
sport?
Cold.
Curling looks like I could be made for curling.
Curling?
You know? Yeah, yeah. You know, have you seen that, those guys? Dr. Bikini's here in the studio. Dr. Bikini, have you seen the curlers?
I have before, yeah.
I look like I could be a curling athlete, don't you think?
I'm sure you could do whatever you wanted to,
but. Oh, look at that. Yes. Dr. Bikini, there's a reason why she's our favorite pediatrician, right?
She is. So, it's great.
I was in D.C. last week, Mandy,
oh,
while you were on vacation. I was
yes.
working. I
mm-hmm.
was actually had to work activism.
I don't feel bad
children.
For you. Yeah, no, I really enjoyed my time.
And,
thanks.
But it was interesting, right?
We had some great meetings.
Yeah, we were meeting with Housing and Urban Development and talking about building of low-income housing near high-quality schools. Still in some of these poor neighborhoods, but there are a number of these high-quality schools, and so we were talking a little bit about that. It was sort of an interesting deal.
Mm-hmm.
In this administration, as you know, I'm not in complete agreement with it,
mm-hmm.
or at all, but it was...
There are good things happening.
Well, there are things happening. There are things happening, and so you just try to force the good things that you can out of it, so it's sort of an interesting...
That's right. Well, I'm happy to hear that they're being strategic, and how can we put low-income housing around schools that are performing,
yeah,
right? Education, we know, is the way to go.
And then we had some meetings around with some of the other nonprofits around our new initiative on New American Children, right?
Mm-hmm.
This whole idea of how do we help immigrant children. So some interesting stuff going on. But we have a good show today.
We have a wonderful show.
Dr. Bikini's here.
Mm-hmm.
She's brought her young residents, right? So they'll be here as well. And so... Is it ever better than when we have Dr. Bikini and the other docs here?
It's my favorite show of the month.
Always, right?
Always.
It's always the best. So, by the way, Dr. Bikini, on my way to D.C., another one of my favorite pediatricians, Jean Raphael.
Yes, you have so many favorite pediatricians.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, well, they're not of my as favorite as you are, right?
Oh, okay.
But,
I see.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When they're in the room, they're up there, right?
Right. Yeah. I know how it works.
So, today on the show, first off, we're going to have Kelly O'Quinn is back on the program. She's the Associate Director of the Center for Social Measurement and Evaluation. Mandy, the number today, this is like right on my age, 26.
26,
right?
Mm, what could it mean?
What do you think it is?
It's not 26. Your age.
It's not my age.
No,
okay.
It's not. But stay tuned and find out.
Mm-hmm.
And after Data Head, we'll be talking with Stephen Chambers, the Senior Manager of Emerge HISD and candidate for State Board of Education for District 4. And he's going to be talking about his vision for education.
So we have a couple of these candidates
mm-hmm.
For State Board of Education that we're going to have over the next couple of weeks, right, on the program.
That's right, so giving everyone an opportunity.
We're going to be talking to our good buddy, Patricia Cole. She's over in D.C. She's the Senior Director of Federal Policy for 0-3, talking about current policy issues for babies, toddlers. And they have a new campaign at 0-3. It's called Think Babies Campaign. So... Think babies, Mandy.
There we go. And today on our social conscience scale, we want you to call in and share your opinion, thumbs up or thumbs down. And we will be discussing, should kids in Needville ISD participate in the national gun control walkout?
So
this
Needville was the one school district that we heard a lot about
mm-hmm.
nationally. I heard about this in D.C. It's here in the Houston area. But their superintendent said he was going to... do the most suspension that he could, 3-day suspension, for any kid who decides to use their rights in terms of walking out, right? And so he changed the penalty Yep. You know, usually if you walked out for 17 minutes or whatever this walkout is, you might get, you know, a talking to. But now it's a automatic three-day suspension.
Probably more than a talking to.
You think if you walked out for 17 minutes?
Yes.
What would have happened, Dr. Bikini, if you would have walked out for 17 minutes?
Oh, I'm not the best person to ask about that.
Would you have walked out, or would you like? Are you too bound by the rules?
Oh gosh, yeah, that would really stress me out.
But you're also you have a little activist in you.
That's exactly right. I'd be very torn. But let's save this conversation for thumbs up, thumbs down.
Okay, that's
yeah,
what we'll
I have
do.
Strong opinions.
Look at that, Claire's like all over it. Right, so save the conversation. She has a good one. She wants to really get into this. So. I think that would be a good conversation, Mandy. How do you feel about the kids walking out? Let's save it.
I have strong opinions as well.
Yeah. Our final guest today will be here with our good friend, Dr. Bikini, pediatric residents Chloe Rushing and Ernesto Fernando. Dr. Chloe, Dr. Ernesto are here today. They're going to be talking about adolescent health topics, HPV, sex education, as well as a little bit about gun safety, right? So, and I think this is interesting. Dr. Ernesto, right, is from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And Florida is the one state where pediatricians are not allowed to talk about guns. And
well, they used to not be able to, but they
did that change?
Yes, it actually.
When did that change?
Recently, I think within the last year and a half or so. Yeah. So it has changed, which is really good. I think before the last legislative session in Texas, it had changed, which is good.
That's good. So
there,
every state now, pediatricians can ask a parent, and this is important to say what it is. Parents, pediatricians can ask a parent, do you have a gun in your home? And then sort of recommend safety procedures.
Absolutely. That's exactly why we ask. We're not trying to be intrusive. We're trying to make sure that all families are educated on how to store a gun most safely and just know the risks of having a gun in their home.
Dr. Bikini, when we look at the rankings of how children die, where do gun deaths come in? It's pretty high.
Well,
isn't it?
Homicide and suicide together are certainly within the top 10. I don't remember. Oh, it's third. Okay, thank you, Bob.
It's up there in the top three. It's up there. Yeah.
So. She's in the top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, when you combine them together, it's a big thing.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's a gun in the home.
Not always, but a lot of them are accidental,
and
a lot of them are self-inflicted, and that's when, I mean, we see this all the time, and that's why it's just so tragic, and we're so passionate about trying to help families be safe.
Yeah. Be safe.
So we'll talk a little bit about
yes.
that today with our, it's good to have a bunch of doctors in the house, right? Because, you know, the science, they follow science, and they do a pretty good job. So
we're going to have a fantastic show today.
And Mandy is back. Hey, Shay did a good job last week, by the way.
Oh, Mandy. Good. Thank you, Shay, for filling in.
Yeah, but
I'm glad to be at the table.
Yeah, it's always
in
good
front
to
of the mic.
Here. Yeah, because you tease me more than any other co-host.
Oh, good.
Yeah,
I take pride in that.
You give me a hard time,
thank
right?
You. Right.
Because I'm so nice to you, you know, always.
Always.
So, hey, welcome to Growing Up in America here on Pacifica Radio. This is a discussion on our children, public policy, politics, and our future. How do we as a nation do when it comes to taking care of all of our kids? Are you ready for a little bit of data head? Poetry in Motion is the name. Kelly O'Quinn is the game. Kelly O'Quinn, who is associate director over at Center for Social Measurement Evaluation. O'Quinn, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are y'all? It's been
great.
A while.
Great. Hi, Kelly.
Kelly, has it been a while since you've been on the program?
Yeah, almost like, I want to say at least six, maybe eight months or more.
Oh,
eight
way too long.
That's too long for Kelly.
Way too long.
We always need ourselves some Kels. And so we're glad you're here. And you have like a big number for us as the data head today, Kelly.
I do. It's 26. What do you think that is, Dr. Bob, Mandy, Dr. Bikini?
Not Bob's age.
My age. Dr. Bikini, do you have an idea what 26 might be?
I don't. Well, but I've seen the script.
Oh, you've seen? I have not. You know, so I walk in here and I never look at anything. So what is it, Kelly?
Sure. So 26 is the percent that Texas public schools enrollment has increased the past 12 years, which doesn't seem that crazy, right? We know our population has increased, enrollment has increased. But what's crazy is my second number for you, so I'm tricking you a little bit.
Oh, okay. I love a good trick.
My second number is 38%. And so we've actually seen a 38% decrease in the number of students that are receiving special education services for things like dyslexia. And so that, to me, is really astounding.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So 26% increase in students classified as special ed because of dyslexia?
No, a 26% increase just in enrollment.
Oh, just in enrollment in the state of Texas?
Sure, yes.
Oh, wow.
But there's a decrease by 38% in services received.
Wow.
That is correct.
So what are we talking about? So the increase, we could say, is because screening is better, potentially, right? Or are kids more... I mean, do we have more special ed kids than we did 15 years ago? Or are we doing a better job of identifying?
Yeah, we're definitely doing a better job of identifying, right? But I think there's been some, you know, ambiguity in state policy about then what do we do with those students that are identified, and so how do we serve them? You know, in a recent report that came out of Texas after more than a year-long investigation, you know, we were found that Texas was essentially capping the number of students that could receive
right.
These services, which is really just doing a disservice to our students. If students are struggling to learn how to read, if they have dyslexia, we know reading is the foundation of so much of our education. You're not just reading to read, you're reading to learn. And so if you can't learn, it's just a huge disservice to our youth as they move forward.
So you're saying that Texas will screen all the kids or kids that parents ask, but then they put a cap and saying, okay, we'll screen everyone, but only X amount are actually going to receive services.
Well, there's really not a lot of screening going on, is there, Kelly?
I think that kind of varies by school district.
Yeah. But I think what
you're
saying...
Well, there are, because the number's increasing.
Well, that's, you would know, you would think that, right? But I know that this cap, though, and for a long time, this has been quite controversial, right? Because Texas put this cap on, and it wasn't just Texas. I mean, some districts did it, are a little bit more enthusiastic about it, and saying that they're doing a better job with special ed because we have fewer special ed students, when indeed, when you compare to other states, it's just that we put this artificial cap on it.
Right. And there was actually a policy in Texas that was, I mean, again, policies can be ambiguous and it can be interpreted different ways, but many districts were interpreting this policy saying that, you know, they were only going to provide federally funded services for students with dyslexia if they also had a different special education diagnosis. So then there's not a ton of other state funding that's going towards providing services, and so you essentially have what would be, you know, unfunded mandate to provide services, which means that it
So what happens?
It wasn't happening.
What happens, Kelly? Right, if we decide we're going to screen and we're going to deal with each one of these special ed cases, whether it be dyslexia or something else, in a sense, it becomes this is another financial burden for our school districts, right? The state is completely underfunding us for this stuff.
Absolutely. You know, I heard someone say last week that, you know, our budgets reflect our values, and so if we value the education of our kids, then we have to put money towards this. And I know that. You know, times are tight. There's a lot of people asking for a lot of money for different things. But at the end of the day, our kids and our education have to be a priority.
Dr. Bikini, is this just a matter of we're really not thinking about the future, that Texans in general? I mean, there's a group that votes maybe accordingly, but then the majority still doesn't seem to care much about what the future holds, our future workforce.
Not that they completely don't care, but I think they value keeping the budget more tight than to try to plan for the future. But it is always really tough talking about both education and healthcare in Austin.
Yeah. Well, what we need to do is just look at school finance, which I know that the Texas legislature is, and there's a commission. Let's look at it again. But, I mean... The next session starts in January, right? So we have less than a year. We'll let you review school finance and how you want to fund our education system. But there are expectations that they're actually going to do something about it in January.
Absolutely.
My expectations, what about yours, right? Yeah, like, we're not just going to study it to study it.
Yeah.
So how can we make it more equitable? Because dyslexia is something that really can prevent children from learning, right? You have to be able to read to learn. It is a foundation and something so simple that can be fixed.
What were you going to say, Kelly, before Mandy interrupted you? What was that?
Just 100% agree with what Mandy was saying.
That's great.
Yeah.
I always agree with you, Mandy.
Everyone always agrees with Mandy, right? People feel free to argue with me, but Mandy, no. Everyone loves Mandy. You know, here's the sad thing. I always agree with Mandy, right? So that's the thing. Kelly O'Quinn is Associate Director at the Center for Social Measurement Evaluation. She's one of our top researchers. Kelly, thank you so much for the work that you do. Thanks for being on the program today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Have a good one. Take care.
Take care.
Y'all too. Bye-bye. Bye.
Kelly's always good, isn't she?
She's great.
She's got it going on. Hey, Don, do we have theme music today for some of our guests on the show, or what are we looking like? We do. All right, I'm ready for a little bit of theme music, right?
First things first, I'ma say all the words inside my head.
You know this song, Mandy?
Of course. Do you?
Yeah, this is Believer, Imagine Dragons, right? So, hey, on the line with us is Stephen Chambers. Stephen is the candidate for the State Board of Education, District 4. He's the senior manager in the Houston Independent School District for Emerge. Stephen, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very, very
great.
Good.
Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So, hey, explain to people. People never know what the State Board of Education does. What do they do, Stephen? If you're elected to the State Board, what is it that the State Board does?
Yeah, so a primary part of the position is a lot of curriculum review, curriculum standards. There's a bit on approval on the teacher certification side. A lot of instructional resources come through the State Board of Education, and a lot of people know the State Board for those things, especially the curriculum and the instructional materials. And there's been a lot of news around, especially the instructional materials, mm-hmm. More recently.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so you're interested in being on the State Board of Education. You're running, but right now you're the senior manager also of Emerge HISD. So what is it that you're doing that helps you or that you believe prepares you to be on the State Board?
Sure. So in my current role, we work with students across the entire Houston Independent School District. So we're currently in 42 high schools, and we're in Spring Branch, and we're in Spring. And in this role, I've been able to work with students directly as it relates to college and career readiness. So our program specifically prepares high-performing students from underserved backgrounds, and we basically offer them tailored and individualized advisement based on their individual strengths, where they are in with their transcripts, and we basically tailor our college readiness curriculum to wherever they are to help them get into. A lot of our schools are kind of considered top tier and Ivy League schools, but we also help match them with schools that offer them funds. So I want to pull from that experience on the college and career readiness side with some of the things and the ways that I want to advocate for curriculum enhancements, especially as it relates to college readiness.
Stephen, I know one of the things that you love is the early education, right? And when we look at the research around early education, it's obvious that, in a sense, right, some of the best college prep programs and dropout prevention programs are really investments in early education, right? It's the bigger bang,
yeah.
The bigger bang for your buck. When you think about this from the prospect of being on the State Board of Education, what are things that we can do at the state level to change things up a bit?
Sure. So I was a fourth grade and fifth grade teacher for a few years. And one of the things that I realized or kind of came to know when my students reached me in the fourth grade is that they weren't ready to even master fourth grade curriculum and objectives, let alone pass standardized tests. And so talking to a lot of my colleagues that were early childhood teachers, they kind of enforced the fact that we need stronger curriculum in the kinder and the pre-K grades.
Yeah.
And the fact that we kind of have, like, half-day mandates for pre-K, and then a lot of times it's optional, and then by the time students get to kindergarten, some of them are not, you know, as up to level as others. But there are ways that I think we can start to include even college readiness objectives in kindergarten curriculum. And that might not be an explicit teaching objective, but it could be something as simple as critical thinking.
And so is that something that you will be pushing for? So if you are a member of the State Board of Education, what do you want to be? What change are you going to bring to the table?
Sure. I definitely want to be on the curriculum side, the instructional side of in terms of committees. And I would love to advocate for all things that are related to strengthening kinder and pre-K teaching objectives.
Yeah, to me, it's really amazing, Stephen, right, is that How much is formulated, you know, pre-K 3, pre-K 4, kindergarten? If we had, you know, full day, high quality programs in those grades, we would be solving a lot of our problems in the state of Texas.
Yes. Yes. I completely agree.
Yeah. And Mandy, when you think about the State Board of Education, right, it's not something a lot of people know about, right? I mean,
it is not, but you know, it's something that we, Children at Risk, have been highly engaged with over the past few years when we started talking about quality early education. And a couple of sessions ago, when it was like, okay, we're raising the bar for quality standards for pre-K, there was a lot of work that needed to be done within the State Board of Education. So when we have these grandiose ideas of what it should be or high expectations, I think Texas as a whole and people in the community need to get more involved in that implementation piece, because it can only be, we can only be so well prepared as our teachers are, right? And we need a lot of help. We're talking about curriculum, and he's not just talking about curriculum for students, but it's also curriculum for teachers as well.
Yeah.
I agree, Mandy.
Yeah, yeah. See, people always agree with Mandy. So, hey, Stephen, District 4, what? Tell us about District 4. Is that Houston? Is that beyond Houston? Where is it?
Yeah, so District 4 is a major portion of Houston. I'd say roughly about 65-70% of Houston, and we dip a little down into Fort Bend County, so a little bit of Missouri City is in there. But it's a huge chunk, 1.7 million constituents in District 4.
Wow,
that's a big deal. And I guess you're running against one other person. And if people want to find out more about you, Stephen, what's your website that they could find out more about you?
Sure. It's Stephen4stateboard.com, Stephen4stateboard.com.
Very good. Stephen Chambers is he's over at Emerge in the Houston Independent School District, and he's a candidate for the State Board of Education District 4. The primary is tomorrow, Mandy.
It is.
Wow.
Or it's actually March 6th.
March 6th. March 6th. Yeah, next week.
Oh, next week.
Yeah, next week.
Not tomorrow.
I was with you.
What was I thinking?
You scared me. Would you say that?
You thought, oh, I lost the whole week of campaigning right there. So yeah,
everything's
so
in a blur.
So next Tuesday is the big primary, so people need to get out and vote. And it's going to be – and in this particular election, Stephen, I know we're out of time, but in this one, this is a Democratic district, right? So the person we elect in the Democratic primary is likely to be on the state board?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
So very good. Right. Thanks, Stephen. Thanks for what you're doing.
Thank you.
And
Thank you.
Good luck to you, man.
Thank you. Y'all have a good one.
All right.
Take care.
Too.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Growing Up in America on Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston. And you ready to talk 0 to 3, Mandy?
Yes. Think
very
babies.
Take your time. The clock is ticking, so stay. All you have to do is wait a second. Your hands on mine.
On the line with us is Patricia Cole. She's the Senior Director of Federal Policy, 0 to 3. Patricia, how'd you like the theme music? That was pretty good, right?
It was great. I was really rocking, and I'm getting ready for Think Babies and Strolling Thunder. Yeah. And that was
we just want our babies to stay small, right?
Stay.
Yes. I'm with you there.
So, Patricia, it's been a little while since we've talked to you, but I wanted to know about this. I know there's a couple things to talk to you about, but the Think Babies. Tell us about that campaign.
Right. So this is something we are really excited about. It's been a dream for a number of years. So last year with the through the generous help of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, we were able to start the Think Babies campaign. And it's a campaign to help policymakers understand the importance of supporting strong early development. So we know that young children's brains are developing at an astonishing rate, at 1 million neural connections every second, and that forms the foundation for all learning that's going to follow. So we know that these are our future workers and even our future lawmakers, so we need to get them off to a good start. And the goal of it is, so we want babies to be the first thing that pops in the policymakers' minds, not just when they're talking about early learning, but when somebody says military readiness or global competitiveness or strong workforce, we want them to think, babies.
Babies.
And, and go there for a policy solution. So we have a number of high priority issues that we've been talking about in the campaign, things like paid family leave and child care, infant mental health, health and nutrition. And we know that every parent has a story. Sometimes it's about child care. Usually it's about child care.
Yeah.
But family leave or a child with special needs. And so one of the high points of the campaign is to bring those stories to Congress. And the way we do that is something that we call Strolling Thunder. And for those of you who aren't familiar with what happens in D.C. on Memorial Day, that's when Vietnam vets on motorcycles come to D.C. by the thousands, and they call it Rolling Thunder. Well, we have Strolling Thunder.
Oh, strollers.
Babies and families from every state, and they come in and they meet with their congressional representatives. And last year we had several hundred babies and families actually strolling around the Capitol with signs and balloons and all kinds of things. So our next one is scheduled for May 8th, and we are really excited that we're going to be able to have the babies take Capitol Hill again.
Patricia, let me ask you this about Strolling Thunder, and you're having all these families meeting with the representatives. The reception that you get, right? There are certain people that we expect are going to be happy to talk about babies. And frankly, you know, I would say every politician on the Capitol Hill would say they love babies, but that love needs to be demonstrated in the way they're passing legislation. How much love is there for babies right now in that demonstration of passing legislation on Capitol Hill right now?
So actually, in the budget deal that was just passed, there was actually a lot of love for babies and young children. So that was really exciting. And I will say that we always do want to pat Congress on the head. The couple of things that happened there were things that were long overdue, but they did get done. The Children's Health Insurance Program was extended for 10 years.
That was a big deal.
The Home Visiting Program was extended. One of the things that we're really excited about is that there was a very large child care funding increase, with actually double the funding for the Child Care and Development Block Grant, which is the big
that was a big deal.
That's when everyone was really doing the happy dance, right, when it came. And and you just said, Patricia, you know, when you talk to families, what comes to mind when they think of babies, and it is child care. When we live in a world where the majority of families have two parents who are working, child care is extremely important. And the more that we learn about it, the more people understand that access to quality child care, early education is important. And with the budget that we had, it was just really difficult, right? And the conversation of people having, okay, do you want more kids or do you want to increase quality? And it's something that shouldn't be compromised, because we need to figure out how to do both.
Well, this increase, Patricia, from your vantage point, does this double the number of parents that will be able to get child care support, or does it mean we're going to have higher quality? How do you think, and I know it will be different in every state, but in general, how will it manifest itself, do you think?
So it works in several different ways. So one way that it works is it will it won't double the number of children, because there's actually another part of the child care funding. So this it doubles the discretionary funding, but it's almost $3 billion a year. So that's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So it will, over the past 10 years, states have lost the capacity to serve about 375,000 kids. So this is going to partially make up for that. It'll enable nationwide, an estimate is roughly about 226,000 kids. For Texas, what it means, so Texas will start off getting about $293 million more for child care every year. And over the last 10 years, Texas has served 15,000 fewer children. And they actually will be able to make up that deficit with serving 18,000 more kids.
Wow.
But there's another thing that this really helped. So in the last reauthorization, we were able to include a set aside specifically to help improve the quality of infant toddler care. And you're so right, Mandy, that it's the quality is just as important, because from the child's standpoint, that is where a lot of early brain development unfolds, in those 8 to 10 hours that they may spend in child care every day. So there's a 3% set aside of all child care funding in the block grant to improve infant toddler quality. So if you add $2.9 billion, that's a lot more that's really targeted toward in that direction, and states can do even more. or they can look at how can we use this to raise our rates so that parents will get more help and to get to the best child care. So there are a lot of different ways that that it will help. But a lot of it is really sort of making up for lost ground that over the past decade.
I'm excited. I mean, this is a time for early education. I really think so. And it's a good time. Now, it is well-deserved and needed, but I just think that things are moving in the right direction. On top of the additional dollars, here recently also eligibility was extended, right, from 6 months to 12 months. So there's more stability for families, and now that there's more funding coming in to help them out, makes me excited.
So they know that once they get in, that they don't have to worry about if I lose my job for a few months or whatever, that I'm not going to have child care, that they're going to be able to stay. And if I could just say one other thing, I
Very
think
quickly,
this really shows what happens over, as if we just keep the faith and we keep raising an issue and keep the drumbeat, that last year in the presidential campaign, we heard for the first time things like child care talked about by presidential candidates. And people kept that up. And to get this kind of money in a bill like this, it really says that Congress has heard the message that this is something that working families really need, and they need to pay attention.
Some victories for kids. Patricia Cole is the Senior Director of Federal Policy for our good friend, for our good friends at Zero to Three. Thank you very much, Patricia, for the work you do. Thanks for being on the program. It's good to hear you back here on the show.
Thanks. It was good to be back, and I hope to see you again in D.C. sometime.
Yes, talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
I think I cut her off right there, right? Was that?
That's real nice of you, Bob.
I know. I'm just...
It's okay.
Yeah, we're just trying to move on. Yeah, move forward.
That was great. It's exciting times for early education. It really is. A lot of possibilities.
Yeah, very good. You're listening to Growing Up in America on KPFT Pacifica Radio. And are you ready for a little thumbs up, thumbs down? Good.
You don't get your music.
I love that music, though. You know, I love it. Boom. Yes, indeed. So what are you thinking on this one, Mandy, this thumbs up, thumbs down?
Okay, so just a reminder, today we are talking about should kids in Needville ISD participate in the National Gun Control Walkout? Thumbs up, thumbs down. We encourage you to call and share your opinion, 713-526-5738, 713-526-5738.
So what do you think about this, Mandy? So here, Needville ISD has said they're going to suspend these kids for 3 full days if they walk out. And this is, we're talking, this is the 17-minute walkout, right?
Right.
What do you think about this?
So I think that a school district...
And have they changed
district,
the rules just for this? They're trying to really deter this.
Right,
and
that's just one particular school district. And other school districts may or may not be doing that as well.
ISD.
But I think that a school district, I mean, your primary job is to educate kids and to keep them safe. And when you have kids walking out of school, that is harmful for your job,
it's
right?
But
that's not your job. No, hold on. I mean, is it?
Yes.
For the school district to say, yes, you can walk out on us, the administration are there. They're trying to help those kids. So I am...
They can do like a teach-in out in the courtyards.
No,
or the...
but they can't because it's not controlled. They're not equipped for that. I mean, I truly feel like they're not. So I have no problem with the school district...
You're such a mom.
Listen, I have no problem with the school district saying, no, you cannot walk out or we're going to try to deter you from walking out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a mom, if I had a kid that was extremely passionate about what was going on and wanted to voice their opinion and say, you know, we want more counselors, we want more support services in it, this is an opportunity for me to walk out. I'm not telling them what to do, first of all. But would I let them?
But you would say,
it's their choice, but there's
consequences.
They're going to
get suspended for 3 days,
yes.
But I support you walking out.
If that is really important to you. But, you know, also at the same time, why don't you gather on the steps at 8 o'clock on Saturday morning? You know what I mean?
It's not the same as a walkout.
Oh, no. And I just want to make sure that those kids who are participating, do it for the right reason. Don't walk out because you get to make a statement and just walk out. This is something serious that people are trying to have a voice, and I just hope it goes well.
And we know there are kids that are going to run, see if they're going to estimate, can I, in that time that I walked out, run to the Burger King and get something to eat before I come back?
And that's wrong. and that's wrong.
Well,
and
I mean,
of course,
it's for them. I mean, it's a protest.
No, it's not.
It's a protest.
No, it's not a protest. I want to go get Burger King.
I was a kid protester, and maybe you get hungry as you walk out of the school.
Well, that's
right?
Really unfortunate. So I don't mind schools trying to deter them from walking out.
Yeah, you don't. So you're gonna say thumbs up to 3-day suspension.
I mean, that's not
Change
what this says.
Rules.
It says, should kids in Needville ISD participate in the National Gun Control Walkout? I'm saying...
Well, they get 3-day suspension in Needville.
That's what they will do.
So you think yes. Thumbs up. Needville should do the 3-day suspension.
That's not the question. That's not the question.
So you're
saying... not talking about penalties. We're not talking about what the penalty should be.
Oh, it is
penalty. Should schools try to deter
kids...
them from walking out? Yes, I'm thumbs up.
Yeah.
If a kid feels extremely passionate about
you
it,
they should do it,
and is willing to deal with the consequences, knock yourself out. Thumbs up. So see, I'm thumbs up for two different things.
Your thumbs up, school district can do the 3-day suspension, and your thumbs up, kids should walk out.
If they want to.
Yeah,
I'm not saying should.
No, if they want to. Right? Dr. Bikini, what are you thinking on this one? Dr. Claire Bikini's in the studio with us today.
Yes. So I think this is, it's sad to me that kids are being, pressured to not voice their opinion. I think what's been happening over the past couple weeks, although completely tragic and sad to watch, is really motivating and very moving. And I think that it's really important to listen to adolescents who are very intelligent and have really strong opinions to something that really matters about them. So I think kids should be allowed to voice their opinion and to try to do it in a safe way. And it makes me sad when I see animosity between the school administrators and the kids who want to voice their opinion.
Yeah, I'm giving two big thumbs down to the school district on this one. I mean, the idea of changing the rules, if someone walks out another day, they're not going to get 3-day suspension. So changing the rules to discourage this is two big thumbs down to me. Thumbs up on the whole idea, Mandy, of walking out. I think if kids feel strongly about this, do it, no matter what the penalty is. I would have done it as a kid. I did this sort of stuff, and I think it's good for kids. Now I know that there are certain kids that are going to try to figure out just a way to get out of class. But, you know, that's part of the deal. This happens. This stuff happens. And I hope that across the country enough people walk out that we sort of, you know, that the kids are woke by this, right? That they have decided that they're going to be a part of something. And I really like it. I really think
it's
a good
idea. Well, I just hope
that
it's safe, right? And that there's no shenanigans that go on and that people take it seriously. And again, I don't know why they can't go and protest at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday.
But it's not the same effect as walking out. No,
sure
it does not
does.
Have the same effect. That's like a mom. You're like, okay, why don't you kids just protest on Saturday when no one really cares?
No, that's not true. People protest on the weekends all the time. All the time.
Yeah. In front of their school when no one's there.
Well, you know what? Make a statement. Say, hey, we care about our school so much. We're showing up at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning.
So in the studio, also, Dr. Chloe Rushing, Dr. Ernesto Fernandez are here for the rest of the hour. So, Dr. Chloe, what are you thinking on this one? I mean, you like this idea? I mean, thumbs up, thumbs down to the school district and to the kids. What are you thinking?
I think thumbs down to the school district for changing the rules. And in some way, it may actually encourage some children to participate
that wouldn't,
because if everyone's getting this 3-day suspension, they think, okay, I got a 3-day holiday.
That's a lot of time at Burger King.
Is a lot of time at Burger King.
Yeah. Really too much time at Burger King, I'm going to say. So your thumbs down to the school district, thumbs up. Dr. Ernesto, what are you thinking on this one?
Yeah, well, while it seems relatively punitive, I agree with Mandy. I think it's...
You like the rules, Ernesto. You're like a rule guy.
I like the rules. It seems excessively punitive to have a 3-day suspension, but your job is at that stage in your life to learn, to educate yourself.
Do you think the superintendent's trying to make a political statement, or is he just trying to keep the kids safe?
I can't comment because I don't know him personally.
Yeah. What do you think, just as a smart guy yourself?
Well, thanks for the compliment, but I'd probably say that he's making a point to make it safe for the students, making it excessively punitive so that
they think twice.
They don't go out exactly. But
it's interesting though, right? I mean, I've had this discussion with some other people, and I thought it was a political statement on his part, but I've heard from quite a few others that say, no, he's just overemphasizing the safety thing. He wants to sort of nip it in the bud, right? I'm going to use the fullest extent of that I can, and that's 3 days. So it's. But I think that in and of itself is a political thing, right?
So someone called in and suggested that the kids write a report about the protest to make up for the missed school time.
Yeah, there you go. A nice little report. Let's go to Sophia, who's on the line with us. Sophia, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you think on this one?
Definitely thumbs down for them changing the amount of time for the suspension. I think that's just absurd.
Yep.
Kind of going against, what the whole message is. And I think I do like the idea of writing a report.
Right.
I'm a teacher. I'm a pre-K teacher myself. And, I've been doing it for a few years. So just the thought of how many schools, how many shootings we've had, the fact that it's almost common, I think that it is a reason for people to walk out. And I think that it's so extreme that it takes more than just a Saturday.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking my call.
Hey, thank you, Sophia. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's going to be hard for pre-K kids to walk out. You're going to have to hold hands.
I think
we're going to walk out, but we're going to hold hands.
I think they're going to stay in the classroom.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. I would hold hands and stay together, and we're going to have a fenced-in area that we'll walk out into, and we'll have little placards that
you're
we can
funny.
Hold up.
No.
So, very good. So
we'll see. It's a little mixed.
A little bit of agreement, though, on terms of walking out, except maybe Dr. Ernesto was holding in a little bit on that. And then mixed on...
He was agreeing with me.
Yeah, okay.
That was smart. So,
I think Bikini and Chloe agreed with me, though. I'm just saying.
Okay, that's fine.
Very good. Hey, because we have... Do we have the theme music for our docs in the room? I love this music, right? Can you hear it, Mandy? Can't you just...
Doctor.
Give me the news. Okay, that's it. Do we have some? No, that's it.
Well, that was actually pretty good.
Thank you. Don't you think?
Yeah. I got a bad case.
I love it, you.
All right, very nice. In the studio, Dr. Claire Bikini, along with Dr. Ernesto, Dr. Chloe, and both residents. And we want to talk a little bit about gun safety, but I think what we really want to focus on are vaccines and some HPV stuff. But firstly, Dr. Chloe, just briefly, on gun safety, from the pediatric point of view, and I mean, when we have guns in homes, we have to be careful.
Absolutely. And there are a lot of people in Texas that do have guns in their homes. And one of our main positions as a pediatrician is to help educate families on how to keep their guns safe, how to keep guns and ammunition in different places, and how to make sure everything is locked up so that their children can't get into the guns.
Yeah. I appreciate the screening. When you go to our pediatrician, they ask you the 20 questions, which is really good.
Yeah. And I think we can't underestimate, this. We have a gun culture. We have a lot of guns in our homes. We just need to make sure our kids are locking them up, right? That we've gun safes and trigger safes.
Hopefully the parents are locking them up.
That's right.
Yeah, and the kids. No. But, there have been so many studies that have shown that, parents don't think their kids know where the guns are located, but pretty much all the kids know where their guns are located in the home. And it's really important to ask about safe storage. But the other thing I think it's really important as pediatricians that we need to ask is the mental health of the kids in the home. Because we unfortunately see too many kids who are upset and have self-inflicted gunshot wounds. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that's really an important message for everybody who's listening, is that if you have an adolescent or a pre-adolescent child who is upset and has problems with depression or anxiety, the safest thing is not to have a gun in the home. No matter how safely you store it, it's still there. And that's one of the biggest risks for a child to actually go through with hurting themselves.
And once the kids go off to college, bring the kid the guns in and do what you want to do with it. But with kids, it's always such a deal. Dr. Ernesto, let me switch the subject a little bit on us. Sex education, right? Let's talk about sex education. One of the things that we know in our country is that sexual activity has actually gone down amongst teens. Maybe a little bit of an increase in the middle school years, but overall sexual activity is down. Teen pregnancy is down. kids are finding a lot more information on the internet, but there's also a lot more states that are doing sex education. But in some states, sex education, no matter how much evidence exists, sex education is not being offered. And what we're finding with those states tend to have the higher sexual activity and certainly the higher teen pregnancy rates. Kids, when they have information, are tending to do the right thing, but public policy wise, we're not letting them do the right things when it comes to sex ed in the schools.
Yeah, so education has kind of been the topic of the whole conversation today. So I think education in general is good. I got sexual education when I was in high school, and I think it helped me. It teaches you about sex.
And you went to high school in Florida, so yes, Florida, correct. You were getting some sex ed, right?
Yeah, but. In general,
and Texas was doing sex ed back then.
For a couple of years, a couple sessions ago, we stopped it, right?
Right, yeah. Right.
But in general, I know in Texas, it's been about 83% of Texas school districts teach abstinence only or provide no education. And in the last about 10 years, since 08 to 2016, the increase of no education at all has gone up dramatically from 2% to about 20%.
I think this is a very interesting thing, right? The whole abstinence only, because even for teen moms, when they're still a teenager, once they've had a child, still we're preaching abstinence to those moms. You've had a baby, but the best thing to do is just abstinence from the pediatric point of view, Dr. Ernesto. I mean, what as a pediatrician, what do you say when you see these kids?
It's tragic to have two well-child texts where you're seeing both the mother and the child at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in general, just teaching safe sexual practices, trying to encourage, I know this topic we're going to talk about, but HPV vaccine and preventive vaccinations is kind of what my job is as a pediatrician.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to tell them what to do, but I'll advise them what I think is best and offer them counseling if they have specific questions.
Dr. Clote. Go on. I'm sorry.
It's just frustrating, and you can ask Chloe your question, but it's not like these kids aren't getting the information, right? And so with the internet, right, and the website, they can look it up.
They have to be looking for it, though,
right.
If they don't have sex ed in the schools.
Right. Yeah. And when you think of curious kids, they're probably looking it up, but is it accurate? Is it not?
Right.
Is it evidence-based or not? And so to pretend like it's not happening or these are the only answers is just really doing a disservice to them.
Dr. Chloe, to Mandy's point, right now, if a kid is not getting information in school and they're curious, and we want our children to be curious, and they go on the internet, many of our children are being exposed when they start looking for sex education to pornography, and they're learning sex ed from pornography. I mean, how can we switch around public policy in regards to this?
So that's a very fair point that when you do search the internet, the evidence-based sexual education is not going to be the first thing that pops up.
Yeah.
And so it is really difficult to say what children are seeing. From our point of view, the way to get the correct information across to them is to have a systematic way of teaching it to all children and to be able to guarantee that that's what they have. Sexual education in schools is one way to do that. What we have seen is with abstinence-only education or with no sexual education, we can't tell what kids are seeing. And we've seen that a comprehensive sexual education program can help provide prevention techniques to children so that they know the skills, they know the different options that they have to protect themselves from that point on and into their adult life. So we're not just talking about during the teenage years.
And to have a dialogue, right, rather than just reading something. Y'all were talking about HPV, Ernesto. Right now, I mean, that was a controversial issue a few years ago on the HPV vaccination.
It's still controversial. Just in different ways, right?
Yeah,
that is true.
Yeah.
But do you see in Texas, are the rates going up or down or staying straight?
So I can comment as to the overall trend in the country and then as to where Texas lies in that. So we know that it's a multi-dose vaccine series that you have to give.
Is it like three times?
It depends on the age. If you're younger than 15 and you get your first dose, you only need two doses. So it is a burden. If you're a little bit older, you have to come in more often.
Yeah.
And you get a better response from the immune system from that first vaccine if you're younger. But in general, we recommend giving the full dose series. We know that 60% of people get that first dose around the country. It's a little bit lower in Texas than about 40%. But the encouraging thing is that with only partial use of this vaccine schedule, we've seen about 2/3 reduction of HPV-related disease. We don't know about the end markers of cervical cancer or other types of cancer, but it's encouraging.
Now, a lot of boys, we're seeing an uptick in the number of boys that are getting HPV. And so we're seeing parents sort of react accordingly, saying, I need to get both my daughters and my sons vaccinated for HPV. Are we seeing that reaction in Texas, or are we seeing this more nationally?
I can tell you what I see in my clinic. A lot of times I'll see patients or parents more often than the child who is resistant because they don't think their children are having sex, and that's just a fallacy and a lot of times.
But they will have sex some point in their life, and the idea of getting this HPV is sort of a lifetime prevention, isn't it?
That's the idea.
Yeah. Dr. Bikini?
Yeah, I mean, this is a safe vaccine that prevents cancer, and we know it works best at when it's administered at an 11 or 12-year-old age. We know that gives you long-lasting immunity, and we know that, starting it before you become sexually active is the best way to provide protection. And what Ernesto said is correct. The fact that nationwide, about 60% of adolescents get one dose of the HPV vaccine. Only about 43% get the entire series. And so we're well behind what we would hope to be at this point for a vaccine that prevents cancer. Here in Texas, we're at about 49% with one vaccine. And what we see in Texas is that there's
one dose.
One dose, one dose.
And one of the two or the three
exactly,
that you need.
Exactly, that's right. So we're even more behind, which is why during the last legislative session, I loved some of the policy that was proposed to try to understand.
Representative Davis,
had a wonderful bill that was going to try to reduce some of the disparities in HPV vaccination in our state to make sure everybody had access to it.
Yeah. Dr. Chloe, when you see patients with HPV, how as a pediatrician do you try to communicate to the parents, hey, you need to do your two or your three doses, and how is this going to be good over the lifetime of your child, even as they reach into adult years?
I think one thing that's very important to emphasize with parents is that we are giving this at an age that is generally before kids are sexually active. And the whole point of that, as Dr. Bocchini said, is they have the best immune response at that time, and it gives them lifelong protection. There is some misconception with parents that means that kids will then begin to have sexual intercourse after that, and they'll become sexually active. And really, all of our data shows that is not the case.
What I have to say is it's a vaccine, right?
It's a vaccine that prevents cancer. That's all I say.
There you go.
It doesn't cause you to have increased sexual activity.
No, it does not. No.
So one question, so it sounds like people are a little behind on the series, right? So they'll get one. Okay, let's say then they waited a couple of years. When are you supposed to get the next one? Like how long are you
supposed to? 6 months later.
Okay, so let's say you waited a couple of years, right? Is it okay for it to wait a couple of years, or are you starting over again? Because this could just be a reminder. Hey, if you got one shot, it's not too late. Get your other two.
Yeah, you don't have to start over. No, it counts towards the series. You just have to wait a minimum of 6 months.
And how old, Dr. Chloe, when you need to start taking these? When is it parents should say, when my child reaches this age, okay, we're going to start thinking about HPV?
So ideally, we start at age 11 or 12. You can start as young as 9. And if you miss that 11 to 12 year range, you can start a little bit later. It is approved for boys up to age 21 and for girls up to age 26.
Wow. And are you seeing a lot of boys getting this HPV right now?
Absolutely. We are in our clinic, and we recommend that all boys come in. It is a vaccine that we recommend at that age, and that's how we present it.
And HPV is a cancer that can manifest itself in a number of different ways.
That's right. It's a virus that actually increases your risk of having cancer.
Yeah.
And 31,000 men and women in the United States have an HPV-related cancer diagnosis every year. So it's a large number of people every year, and it affects both men and women.
And if we all took this, we would really stamp out one form of cancer.
Absolutely, and we see this happening in other countries like Australia.
They don't have this cancer anymore.
Oh, you've seen the rates go down.
Significantly. Wow. Well, even now you're saying it's gone down by 2/3, right? Which is significant.
The rate of infection. This vaccine is relatively new, so we're going to see the rates of cervical cancer and throat cancer go down in the long run, but it's too early to tell right now.
And is this something that most doctors, I know y'all are, but most doctors are asking the patients, or is it something that a parent needs to request?
We oftentimes hear other doctors say it, even family medicine practitioners.
Great.
Wow, very good. You ready for a little Final Four with the docs?
Yes, I am. So this is an opportunity for listeners to get to know the doctors a little bit better. And where are we starting?
Dr.
Chloe?
Dr. Chloe, question number one.
What was your favorite toy to play with as a kid?
Favorite toy.
My favorite toy was actually just a plain brown bear that was given to me by my grandparents.
And what did you call it, Dr. Chloe?
It was just my bear.
Bear.
Yeah,
bear. Your little bear. Wow. Little bear. Dr. Chloe has a little bear. Did you use a little stethoscope on it or anything?
I actually did not, but it may have some lipstick and some fragrance from playing dress up with the bear.
Is that Dr. Bikini? Little stethoscope was your favorite toy, right? I just always say that, right?
Yes. No, I love strawberry shortcake.
Oh, that's right. Dr. Ernesto, your favorite toy?
The Power Rangers, the little powers award you got.
Wow. And which Power Ranger was your favorite one?
Oh, my God. Probably the red one.
Wow, the red one.
All right. Next
question. Do your boys
like
Power Rangers?
Yes, they do.
They do. Okay.
Yeah. They've kind of grown out of it a little bit.
Yeah, I know. Ernesto didn't, though. He still loves
it. What did you want to be when you were growing up?
Dr. Ernesto, what did you want to be?
So I had a mother who's a doctor and a father who's a mechanical engineer. So I knew doctor right away.
Yeah. So you always wanted to be a physician.
I liked engineering, but it was the ultimate goal being a doctor.
Yeah, yeah. Dr. Chloe?
As well as Ernesto, I did want to be a doctor.
Yeah.
Unlike him, I did not have any doctors in my family, so no one knows where it came from. But
you just wanted to heal
since
people.
The age of four, yeah.
You just wanted to heal. And Dr. Bikini, we've done this. You wanted to be governor of Louisiana.
I sure did.
Wow.
There you go.
And Mandy, what did you want to be? A ballerina?
No, I wanted to be a paramedic, actually.
Oh, a paramedic.
Yeah.
Wow.
I wanted to drive fast and help people.
Yeah, and what was your favorite toy, by the way? I missed you on that one.
What was my favorite toy?
I don't think we've ever asked ourselves these.
I really liked Cabbage Patch Kids. My basketball. It was like between
your basketball.
Cabbage Patch. Yeah, my
you
basketball.
Were a big basketball player as a kid,
yes,
though.
Yeah, my whole family was. Yeah. Okay, next question. And you? Am I asking you?
No, you don't need to.
But we really care. What is it? What was it?
Little Army Men.
Little Army Men.
That was my favorite little toy. Yeah,
let's
see.
And what did you want to be? A pirate.
Pirate.
I know this.
I wanted to be a pirate.
Yeah. Okay. And Dr. Chloe, what was your favorite book to read as a child?
I was a big fan of the Harry Potter series.
Oh, my son's
Harry
into that
Potter.
Right now.
Yeah. The show opens up on Broadway this week, you know, the new Harry Potter show. Dr. Ernesto, your favorite?
I like Count of Monte Cristo.
Count of Monte Cristo. Mm-hmm. Alexander Dumas. And your favorite book, Dr. Bikini?
To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, yeah. That's always a good one, right? Your favorite book as a kid, Mandy?
Well, I like the Nancy Drew series. Any of them.
Well, very good.
I loved those, too. We used to make my father read those to us as our bedtime stories.
And the Babysitter Club.
Yes, those two. That's right. Mandy and I are the same generation.
Our final question today. Ernesto, when you were a kid growing up, your favorite TV show?
Oh, man. Power Rangers.
Power Rangers.
When I was a small kid, yeah.
Yeah, you're just all over it. Dr. Bikini, your favorite TV show? I don't think we've ever asked you this one before.
Yeah, I'm not sure. We made our father rent videos, Strawberry Shortcake movies, over and over and over, so probably same.
We didn't watch a lot of TV. Was it like Medical Center or ER or something like that?
No, it was like Strawberry Shortcake cartoons.
Yeah. How about you, Dr. Chloe? Your favorite TV show?
You know, I'm having a hard time thinking of one in particular. Honestly, it was really just the Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, man.
Like, I'm still that generation that it was Saturday morning cartoons, whatever came on.
You know, I grew up in Puerto Rico. They did not do Saturday morning cartoons.
That's sad.
But when we moved to the United States and there were Saturday morning cartoons, man, I was like up. I was waking up my brother and sister at 7 a.m. like, cartoons are starting. This is a big old deal. So, Mandy, what was your favorite TV show?
I don't know. I had a lot. One thing that stuck in my head was Saved by the Bell, but I must have been a little bit earlier, but it was all about Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, yeah.
And the soap operas that my mom let me watch at a young age. That was probably inappropriate.
Yeah. Yes, sirree. So, Mandy, in the world of activism, what's coming up this week? I mean, this is anything big this week that we need to know? Because last week, we were all over that. We had people testifying.
That's right. You were in D.C.
Human trafficking. I was in D.C. We had people testifying on Hurricane Harvey.
That's right.
So it was a big week. Anything big this week?
This week? I don't know if there's anything big this week. It's, you know, we pull our stuff together. So making sure that we have our policies, networking. There's a lot of big stakeholder meetings, for sure.
A lot of big stuff going on. But always, we have to keep our eye on the ball in terms of children, making sure we take care of all our children. Hug your kids. And I want to thank the docs who are in the round table today, Dr. Ernesto, Dr. Bikini, Dr. Chloe. Thank you for what you do. And then you brought your other docs who are out there doing all social media.
Yeah, check out our Twitter. Twitter so that you can get some more resources on adolescent health issues.
This is Doctors for Change? Is this the...
Well, no, this is Community Peace. But what we'll do is tweet at Children at Risk, and we'll send out these resources.
Very good. Hey, thank you guys very much. I want to thank Don. I want to thank Marissa. Thank you, Mandy. It's great to have you back
thank
in the
you,
studio.
Thank you, Dr. Bob.
And listen, take care of your kids. We do this for children each and every week. We'll see you next week here on Pacifica Radio.
All listeners and volunteers are invited to meet and greet the new interim executive director of Pacifica Foundation, the mothership for KPFT Houston.
His name is Tom Livingston, and he'll be at the Shape Center in Alameda this Wednesday at 7 p.m.
So bring your questions and suggestions this Wednesday, the 28th at 7 p.m., to the Shape Center at 3903 Alameda.
Everyone really is welcome, so see you there.
See you there.
If you would like to get involved with producing radio for KPFT, consider coming out for the first Saturday Skillshare, 10 a.m. the first Saturday of the month. We'll take 2 hours to teach anyone who attends how to mix radio on a soundboard and basic editing using KPFT's recording studio. If you've got something to teach, get in touch to offer to share your skills as well. You can email me at patrick at kpft.com.